The following episode of The Nonprofits was recorded live Saturday, June 30th, 2007. While the show normally runs 90 minutes, we ran about 20 minutes over, but due to a technical error with the recording software, the final 20 minutes are not available. We apologize, and I wanted to warn everyone in advance that the program will end abruptly, and it took us quite a while to get this episode posted because I was desperately trying to piece together the last 20 minutes or so of the show, where we had a lot of fun, including reading the Dr. Laura letter that many of you are probably familiar with. We have a new recording scheme set up for the next episode, along with some changes to the hardware. Hopefully this type of thing won't happen again. Enjoy the show.
Be Dennis Lube.
Hi.
And he has to be Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
And we have to be your hosts on this day, the 30th of June, 2007. And we have no choice but to be broadcasting from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas. And what you heard could be nothing but Idiot's Rule by Jane's Addiction. In fact, the initial conditions of the Big Bang have determined that the nonprofits are simply an unavoidable effect of the atheist community of Austin, which is, inescapably, a nonprofit educational organization which promotes positive atheism and the separation of church and state. It is also impossible for me to avoid mentioning that the atheist community of Austin has a happy hour, held at the only time and place it can be held, the Dog and Duck, on Thursday nights at 7:30. This necessary chain of cause and effect that stretches back 13 billion years determines not only that the nonprofits are broadcast live every other Saturday from 2 o'clock to 3:30, but also makes it inevitable that some few listeners will participate by logging into the chat room after reading the instructions found at the nonprofits page at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So, since we are nothing but cogs in the vast machine of the universe, I can do nothing but welcome all the cogs listening to this part of the machine.
I hereby denounce everything that Dennis just said. I don't know what the problem is, by the way. I don't know how well this particular podcast is going to come out audio-wise. I'll talk about that a little bit because we've gotten some comments. And there are some limitations that some people might not completely understand, and some things that I'm going to actually be changing. And just now listening, it appears that there's a problem with the stereo for this particular episode. Instead of coming out normal, it sounds weak, it's bouncing back and forth, and I'm not quite sure because I didn't really change anything between last episode and this one. So let's hit that first. A lot of people have written in with suggestions like, hey, you know, if you guys would just get some good mics and a mixing board and, you know, hook it up and use like Audacity or something like that, you can get a podcast that sounds just as good as everybody else's podcast. And you know what? They're absolutely fucking right. And one of the things is that we actually have pretty good mics. They're not cheapos. We have a pretty good soundboard. For those techno people out there, the mic that I'm using is actually a Sony, and he's using a, I don't know what the hell yours is.
Sure.
But the mixing board is an old Eurorack MX-802A. It doesn't suck. It's not up to date, and it may have a slight hiss, but we can correct all that. That's not where the problem is. We're also going to be getting some lapel mics, which keep that it so that when I move away from the mic like this, I don't get, you know, the mic goes with me.
Right.
So we're going to do that. We're also looking at actually getting some headphones in here, because right now we just do it open air at Dillahunty Studios. But headphones, I'll get to why we need those here shortly. But the one thing a lot of people don't realize is that we do the podcast live. So what actually happens is that we broadcast a shoutcast stream, which automatically results in lower quality audio and a number of problems. And people are connecting to the stream live, and then the podcast that gets posted is a rip of that stream. That's what I'm going to change starting next show. I used to have two solid computers here, and one would broadcast and host the show, and the other one would, you know, record the show. That changed when one of my machines died. I'll be getting a new machine sometime in September, but I have a laptop, and what I'm going to do is set up the laptop, put Audacity on it, and some of the people who are non-technical are going, just shut the fuck up already and do the show. But I want to get this out because we get so many comments about this. I'm going to hook the laptop up, put Audacity on it, and run the secondary output out of the mixer board directly into that. So what will happen is we'll broadcast it live over Shoutcast, but the podcast that gets posted will be a direct recording from the soundboard and should be higher quality audio, so the people who don't listen live will have a better audio experience than those who do, and hopefully we'll get rid of a lot of the problems that we've heard. And the other suggestion that's been made is, hey, why don't you guys, you know, since we've lost temporarily Jeff D. and Russell, why don't you guys do some interviews and get some phone calls? And I'd love to, and I have... You know, I don't want to go name-dropping or make myself out to be more than I am. I do have some contacts with some people that I think could be great for the show. It's not like I'm, you know, best buddies with any of them, but I think we could make that happen.
Right.
And I want to do that. The problem is that there's no way for – there's no easy way for us to be able to integrate the call and for you and I to both hear it until we get headphones set up.
Right, if we're doing it over the phone, yes.
Yeah. You wouldn't want a speaker.
If we can find someone to come into the studio here, then we got no problem.
Right. If we're doing it over the phone or over Skype, which has been suggested about a billion times now, which I did an interview over Skype for the 8-Hour Lunch podcast. The audio quality is not quite as good, but, you know, we can work with that. But anyway, we can get the phone set up as soon as we get headphones. And make some other changes. And I'm not making promises, but for those who've been kind of listening to my occasional whines about my employment situation, my final day of work is September 1st. They announced that to me on Thursday. I think it was Thursday. Maybe it was Wednesday. Yeah, it was Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
Instead of October 1st, it's going to be September 1st. And they are going to honor and pay the entire bonus that they gave me to stay beyond March. So while I will be looking for a new job, and I'll do my best to make sure that doesn't affect either of the shows, I'm also probably going to take a little bit of time off and work on finishing up. I'm working on finishing up a book, actually.
Whoa.
Because so many people have mentioned that it might be, you know,
you ought to write a book.
Yeah, well, it may end up being more like a pamphlet that I publish myself. But
correct.
But I'm going to take some time and actually work on it. But I will need to be looking for a new job. But the thing is that bonus money lets me get a second machine, and I'm going to be hitting the ACA up for some money, because the nonprofit uses almost no money. Matter of fact, these two new microphones that we're using right now, I just went and paid for. You know. It's nothing. So what we're going to do is use some of the ACA money to get the lapel mics.
Good.
And I'm going to buy a removable hard drive that has everything about the nonprofits on it. So the show would be completely mobile. You just plug the hard drive into whoever's computer, wherever you're going to do it. And
a backup drive.
Yeah. And also, you know, some headphones and some equipment to get phone calls in. So we are looking at making improvements. It's not going to happen quickly. But, you know, in the September, October time frame, you may get some neat stuff. And also, one of the things that was suggested was just stop doing the live show. Just record it. Then you can you get rid of almost all the problems. And by the way, you're not really interacting with the chat room anyway, because, you know, now that it's just the two of us, I have to turn around.
That's
and,
right.
And
you are not looking at the chat room right now.
However, I don't want to do that. I like the fact that there's a live audience who can participate. Hopefully, when we have more voices on the show, we'll get back into more interaction with that. Yeah. But I know that the folks that are in the chat room every week actually enjoy talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the community aspect of the atheist community of Austin is something that we should continue to foster.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening technically with the podcast. But we're gonna keep on trucking, and I'm gonna let Dennis talk for a little bit while I mess with some audio stuff.
Well, let's see. Got some news. We'll do the good news first. And this is kind of weird. Let's see. Scientists transplant genome of bacteria. Scientists at the Institute, directed by J. Craig Venter, a pioneer in sequencing the human genome, are reporting that they have successfully transplanted the genome of one species of bacteria into another, an achievement they see as a major step towards creating synthetic forms of life. I've been hearing synthetic life forms a lot recently, people talking about that. Could be very neat. His goal is to make cells that might take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and produce methane, used as a feedstock for other fuels. Such an achievement might reduce dependency on fossil fuels and strike a blow at global warming. And I think the only thing that can affect the global warming situation we're currently in is something biological, because that's the only thing that has a chance of being big enough scale to make a difference.
You know, I haven't really considered that much about, you know, one of the things is that there's this really muddy information pool surrounding, you know, what exactly is happening, how much of it is exactly our fault, what exactly can we do to fix it. And I don't think it's, you know, sorted out, but I certainly think that and no matter what your position is, doing something is better than doing nothing.
Right.
And we do know what sort of somethings are most likely to cause changes if it's happening. So,
right.
And we can't really hurt ourselves by making these changes. I mean, if we stopped using fossil fuels tomorrow by some, you know,
right,
wonderful new invention or whatever else, that wouldn't hurt us.
No.
You know, at least not. We wouldn't be doing more damage to the environment. But I haven't looked into the biological prospects. I know that they're looking at biological entities as a way of actually terraforming Mars, which is something they're actually seriously considering doing. My roommate was talking to me about it the other day, and you know, I have the collector's DVD edition of Cosmos, and I've watched it. I'm watching it again this week, and I just love it. But he was talking about how one of the ways to melt the polar ice caps on Mars would be to introduce a biological life form. Basically a blanket of growing plants and algae that heated up and then therefore, you know, help create the atmosphere. And I don't know the specifics of what they're looking at as far as terraforming, but my understanding is that, you know, now at least they're finally starting to look at it as let's try and do this and make something happen.
Yeah, so. Well, it's not unheard of. I mean, the atmosphere we currently breathe is a result of biological life forms that have changed the atmosphere.
Right.
So, it's got a proof of concept and everything. So, He says, we look forward to having the first fuels from synthetic biology, certainly within the decade, and possibly in half that time.
By the way, everybody should have just heard a change in audio, because I think I just fixed the stereo problem. And actually, it was our very, very old soundboard kind of got stuck in a pan right situation. So there's a little short there. So one of the things we'll do is buy a new soundboard.
So anyway, that sounds pretty interesting. Let's see.
Yes. Somebody just corrected us by saying, when I said biological life form, they said as opposed to some other.
Yeah. I was stretching it out so I could. I'm using that phrase to stretch out the word so I can think in between. I'm no good at
we're fans of
multitasking.
Of duplicate redundancies.
That's right.
Fair point,
Let's
though.
See.
I don't, you know, and I sincerely appreciate those kinds of corrections because it helps you, as long as you actually acknowledge them and hope to change things in the future, it helps you be more clear in the future and make less stupid mistakes. One of the words or non-words that drive me crazy is irregardless. And it's something that, I mean, it's nearly ubiquitous in its misuse because, you know, you have irrespective, which is a word, and regardless, which is a word. And you have other words, and I'm not going to come up with one off the top of my head, where, you know, it means the same before and after you add a prefix or you know, whatever. So, irregardless seems like a word that most people just kind of say, oh, yeah, that must be right. And it's not.
No.
Please stop.
It completely destroys the word regardless. I mean, it's used as regardless, but destroys that.
And I'm sure I've been guilty of using it on occasion, too. But usually it's like when you really, when I misuse it, which I hope is extremely rare, it's when I mean to say irrespective.
Right.
And I just jumble it with regardless. Anyway, that's nothing. Has nothing to do with the show.
Well, that one was a good science story. Now, here's the bad science story. Not really science, I guess politics story. President Bush on Wednesday issued his second veto of a measure lifting his restrictions on human embryonic stem cell experiments. The move effectively pushed the contentious scientific and ethical debate surrounding the research into the 2008 presidential campaign.
Yeah.
You know,
We have some limits as to how political we can be. We also have some self-imposed limits about how political we are going to be. We're not going to endorse a specific candidate, but I have no problem against railing against people who are currently in office and doing incredibly stupid things. You've got a vice president who is just at a whim making assertions that he is or isn't part of the executive branch. You have the Supreme Court coming down.
What the
hell? I honestly haven't looked into it enough to comment. It wouldn't be fair for me to comment on what's going on there. I got distracted with too many other things this week.
Oh, yeah.
Supreme Court decisions, presidential vetoes, and honestly, I mean, they're setting this up. It's nice that the Supreme Court has reconsidered. They're actually going to look at the appeals of some Guantanamo detainees that they had initially denied.
That's neat.
And while I'm not overly optimistic, I do think that there may be some possibility that they're doing this specifically to make a ruling that is not going to favor justice. I'm at least encouraged that they're willing to take a look at this and make some decision. Because not making any decision maintains the kind of cycle of abuse and justification for it that we see all over the place.
Right. Yeah. So, destroying human life in the hopes of saving human life is not ethical, Mr. Bush said in a brief ceremony in the East Room of the White House. Aren't you the war president? Well, anyway, he called the United States a nation founded on the principle that all human life is sacred, except those that we're killing.
Well, the one thing here is that the president is flat out lying in saying that he needs to veto this in order to stop us from killing more embryos.
Uh-huh.
Because this bill specifically addressed embryos which were already slated to be destroyed.
Oh, great.
So vetoing this hasn't saved a thing.
Single life, yeah.
Hasn't saved a single cell that from being destroyed. They're still going to be destroyed. It's just that now nobody will benefit from the destruction of that handful of cells
that had such promise.
Yeah.
You know, if you guys wouldn't have done experiments on those cells, we might have just been able to destroy them.
Oh, well, brilliant argument. Great, thanks. All right, so what else have we got? Let's see. The Supreme Court, shall we?
Sure.
All right. Washington. The Supreme Court ruled Monday that ordinary taxpayers cannot challenge a White House initiative that helps religious charities get a share of federal money. The 5-4 decision blocks a lawsuit by a group of atheists and agnostics against 8 Bush administration officials, including the head of the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. The taxpayer group, Freedom From Religion Foundation Incorporated, objected to the government conferences in which administration officials encourage religious charities to apply for federal grants.
Now, I am not a lawyer.
Right.
I'll make that clear over and over again. But I do read, follow, and study all of the First Amendment issues, all of the Supreme Court decisions that surround freedom of religion. I'm certainly not an expert, but I'm not the average duffer. What happened in this case, and why I have such a huge problem with this, is that the president established, the executive branch essentially established, these faith-based initiatives. And they did so with this kind of claim that we need to level the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that were true, if that were really what was happening, I'd support that. It seems to be, actually, that would be a function that would be just and fair to level the playing field. In reality, the playing field was level. Faith-based organizations had to compete against other organizations, and it was about as fair as you could get. What we had was a system that determined who was going to get the money based on who was best at doing a particular job.
Right.
And what these faith-based initiatives did was to say, okay, now we need to show preference towards faith-based organizations, even if they're not the best equipped for the job. We saw a huge problem with this with Katrina, faith-based organizations that were helping Katrina survivors and refugees and everything else.
Yeah.
Or evacuees, I guess would be a better word. They weren't equipped to do this. They were forced to, house people in church basements and gas stations, and they didn't have enough food, and they weren't prepared for this. Whereas there were other organizations that were specifically geared towards these types of disasters that were sidelined.
Right.
We're all fairly well aware that Katrina was a colossal fucking disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Start to finish. And continues to be in some areas. The faith-based initiative didn't level the playing field. It skewed it.
Yeah, it slants it now.
It gives preferential treatment to faith-based organizations because they are faith-based organizations, not because they're better equipped to handle the problems.
Mm-hmm.
What the Supreme Court did was make things even worse because there's
now
an implication
that...
one of the things that was brought up was that the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. And therefore...
Oh, no.
That doesn't mean that the president, the executive branch, can't go out and do this stuff. Now, this wasn't... I don't think that this was clearly addressed in the court's opinion, but it was brought up. And what ended up happening is that they made a rule that says, despite the fact that this is supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, for the people, despite the fact that the ultimate power rests with the people, that you cannot, well, what they did was they denied the Freedom From Religion Foundation standing.
Right.
They said, basically, you don't have standing to bring this case. But they were claiming standing as taxpayers. So what they've done is said that taxpayers don't have the right to challenge the way the government spends their money. Now, I realize that this may, in fact, and I hate to say this, may, in fact, be a potentially beneficial type of thing where you don't end up with a whole bunch of frivolous lawsuits of every
right.
single taxpayer coming up and saying,
oh,
I don't
sure.
want you to spend my money that way, blah, blah, blah. I do understand that. I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to leave us open to a billion lawsuits or
right,
600
right.
million lawsuits or whatever. But the thing is that taxpayers need to have some recourse, some way of addressing and correcting the system beyond simply voting in new people.
Right.
We shouldn't allow a bad situation to continue and progressively, you know, explode, becoming bigger and more difficult to defeat, and then force everybody to, okay, now we need to vote in more and more people, because people vote based on a whole bunch of different criteria.
Sure.
My parents, for example, no matter how much they agree, if there were two candidates and they agreed completely with candidate one on every issue but abortion, and candidate two they disagreed with on every issue but abortion, they'd still vote for candidate two.
Right.
For them, that's a critical issue.
That's the deal breaker.
And so yeah. it doesn't matter if everything else that candidate does is in their best interest or not. And this is one of the things where I see people ask, well, what harm does religious belief do? Well, I think we can point to all kinds of harm,
yeah.
both in how it pollutes the mind and things like the global gag rule and other things like that. But one thing that people don't realize is that it establishes, it overinflates some precepts, be
right.
they moral or whatever, to the point where they become all powerful.
It creates irrational criteria for choices.
So, you know, you've got a candidate who, and not everybody votes, I don't want to say that everybody's, you know, as
oh,
religiously
yeah.
motivated as my parents, but.
But I'm sure enough are.
Yeah. It sets you up to kind of use bad criteria to determine who's best to represent you. I mean, we live in a, you know, representative republic, and you want, to me, the person to vote for is the one who best represents your complete view with slight kind of skewing towards those issues that you feel are incredibly important. You know, you may be willing to sacrifice some of your views on, for example, how much money is spent on defense,
mm-hmm.
as long as other views are supported, you know, better. So the Supreme Court's decision, I really don't know how broad
Man.
This can be used.
Yeah.
But what it does, if anything else, is it shows that we need to find a way to, beyond just simple democracy, beyond electing representatives and changing laws over time, for people to petition the government for redress of grievances.
Yeah.
You know,
some of those basic things. Yeah.
To say some things that the government does, regardless of how people feel about it, or what the majority feels about it,
right.
still unjust. That no matter whether or not somebody has standing to bring a case,
mm-hmm.
it's still an abuse of power for any branch of the government to show favoritism towards faith-based organizations because they are faith-based organizations.
Right.
Now, if a church or a religious organization happens to be the best candidate for delivering food to the homeless, fucking A. Give them the money that you, whatever money you've put aside for that particular need, give it to them because they are most qualified. I don't mind, you know, I'd prefer that there were completely secular charities, and there are quite a few. There's Share and
sure.
some others. But I prefer that, you know, the best people for the job were secular, because I don't want us to kind of falsely support religious organizations and keep promoting them and feeding money through them. It depends on how much, you know, if I give a dollar to a religious organization that's the best at feeding the homeless, and only 20 cents of that dollar ends up going towards a task, then which one am I really supporting?
And plus, faith-based organizations, it doesn't seem to me that they really, you know, understand the concept of who's best at doing something.
Okay.
Because if you look at, like, the abstinence programs, right, they don't work. So what's the faith-based solution? More abstinence programs. More of what doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's like... And, of course, we know that... And how much oversight is there over these faith-based initiatives? Who's examining this and making sure they're not just taking the money and pocketing it?
Yeah, there's also the danger from some of these cases and some of these decisions that we are, in the executive branch already seems to have, an obscene amount of power and authority right now.
Yeah, I would categorize it as obscene.
You know, one of the things is that. Consider the First Amendment and that argument that I brought up before, where it says Congress shall make no law regarding an establishment of religion,
sure,
or blah, blah, blah. That does apply to Congress. But that's because Congress are the ones that are supposed to be making laws.
Right.
When you have when you give power to the executive branch to establish initiatives like this,
mm-hmm,
without congressional oversight.
Right. All of a sudden,
You have something that is, for all intents and purposes, a law or the equivalent,
right,
of a law. It's a process that's established, and you've set it up with no oversight. You set it up with no way. The First Amendment doesn't apply.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're looking at it strictly and you're gonna literally interpret the First Amendment on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, there are additional checks and balances that we seem to have forgotten, that we seem to be ignoring.
And
we voted in, a new volley of Democrats that were supposed to be taking charge of some of this stuff and,
mm-hmm,
establishing some oversight, and they take steps, and then when things don't go their way, I guess they just roll over and pee on themselves. I'm largely disappointed, but we don't need to go way down that road.
But we know that religious organizations, if you give them an inch, more often than not, they will take a mile. And
if you give them an inch, that's sodomy.
Well, that's a rather specific, large religious organization there, yeah.
Giving them an inch the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the particular phrasing, and I'm sure it's this way in other laws, is penetration, however slight. So when I was in the Navy, that was a common joke, that giving them an inch qualified as penetration. So.
Wow. Now I got another slogan for leave no childs behind.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a terrible one, yes.
Oh, that's
bad. But that seems to be... a lot of what's going on in some of these organizations.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with our system of government. Well, I'm sure I do at some level.
Yeah.
But I generally think that it can work and should work. We just don't let it work.
We try to spin it to our advantage.
Yeah.
When we want something.
We overinflate this war on terror, which is an absurdity to me. I'm not a pacifist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an isolationist. I do recognize that there's interests and that sometimes diplomacy fails.
Right.
I'm not advocating any particular action. I'm just saying that it may be possible to build a case for a particular action, but we don't do that.
Right.
We have been, for years now, taking actions based on how much fear we can instill in the
mm-hmm.
population to get them approve of these actions. That's an utterly irrational approach.
And it's just eroding the whole government, the whole constitutional checks and balances.
Yeah.
It just erodes the crap out of those. And that's, as far as I can tell, that's permanent damage unless somebody goes in there and fixes it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that's going to happen, because once a bureau or an organization is in place, it's hard to eradicate.
Right. Yeah, it's the whole thing about, you know, it's easier to get forgiveness than permission. It's easier for the president or the executive branch to just establish certain groups, establish certain initiatives, than it is to get them approved through the correct process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just the other day, he invoked executive privilege with regard to documents about the firing of those,
the lawyers?
Yes, the lawyers.
Oh, jeez.
So,
executive privilege, my ass. You know, it's almost like the founding fathers when they you know, suggested that, hey, you know, we should have a revolution every, you know, a few decades or something. I'm going, yeah, it's a time where you can reset the checks and balances. You know, start the new government again. And, you know, reset the checks and balances so they don't just continually erode until there's nothing left.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not calling for a revolution advocating.
No, of course not. But it's like
Something's got to be done because the direction we're heading, the way we're evolving, is kind of
The infrastructure of the government is failing.
Yeah. There's been a big discussion on a lot of the science blogs this week about whether or not atheism is, in fact, a civil rights issue.
I've read some of that.
My friend at CFI, DJ Grothy, wrote an article for Free Inquiry magazine basically saying, no, atheism isn't a civil rights issue, so stop saying it is. He and I had a discussion about that when he was in Austin. Mm-hmm. He came down with Jamie in Swiss a month or two ago. And you know, where we ended up agreeing, it seems to be a matter of definition on this particular issue. Are there actual laws on the books that say you can't do X because you're an atheist?
Yes.
The only ones that I'm aware of are, like, for example, in the Texas Constitution that says you cannot be an elected representative of the government unless you profess belief.
Right.
However, that has been completely overturned by the Supreme Court. It's basically a toothless left remnant in our Constitution.
They haven't removed it from the books yet.
So it's not a legally enforceable law. So apart from those, I'm not aware of any actual codified law that diminishes an atheist's rights because of their atheism. But that's irrelevant. When I talk about civil rights issues with regard to atheism, I tend to avoid using the term because I don't want to try and equate it to the suffrage movement or black rights or gay rights or these other things where there were specific... I mean, it's still legal to discriminate against homosexuals in some areas of the country.
Right.
And there's a difference between what is codified as law...
Right.
And what actually happens
in the real world.
And the fact of the matter is that there are atheists. Look at the Smolkowski family. There's a number of other examples that people have brought up during these discussions. There are judges that specifically rule in a way which appears to be unconstitutional and diminishes and violates the rights of atheists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Supreme Court did this with the standing case. I don't think it was particularly relevant whether or not it was an atheist organization, despite the fact that every news agency felt compelled to say the Freedom from Religion Foundation is an atheist organization. I think that has to do more with the popularity of atheism, you know, in books and being on bestseller.
It's cool.
It's the buzzword.
Yeah.
And, you know, I actually love that. Mm-hmm. Because even if it kind of inflates the people who already despise atheists and non-religious people.
Right. We're not going to get
to
that.
It's going to inflate they're going to hate us even more if that's possible. I don't care. What it does is it brings the issue to the forefront.
Right.
Promotes public discussion and debate and doesn't relegate atheists to this, oh, that's some small minority that doesn't matter, we don't need to consider them, blah, blah, blah. No. You will actually deal with us and our rights because I don't care what you believe. And I'm saying that in a specific context. I do care what people believe. I would prefer that they believe the truth. They have every right to believe whatever silly thing they want. It's the actions that they take on it. How do they vote based on it, and how does that affect everybody else? this kind of imposition of one person's or one group's worldview upon everybody else is the problem. And it does, on some levels, become a civil rights issue. It not because it's codified as law, but because our civil rights are either being sometimes overtly, but oftentimes covertly, violated. Mm-hmm. And even if you want to disregard that, the fact remains that our civil rights are being threatened. When you have people like
every day,
and when you have people like Dan Patrick, who's a Texas senator or representative, I can't remember which one, who I think he's a representative, mm-hmm. who's introducing legislation to make Texas even more godly, mm-hmm. to change the Texas pledge to include under God, to change in God we trust, putting God we trust by the podium, and then blah, blah, blah. Yes, it's the national motto, but my position was it was an unconstitutional, reactionary, kind of sneaky bit of legislation that made it the national motto in the first place. Mm-hmm. It was this McCarthy era, oh no, we don't want to be godless communists, so what shall we do? You know. You know, I really think that needs to be challenged first.
Yeah.
The problem is, how do you get standing? Standing's a motherfucker.
Yeah.
For these broader issues that affect everybody.
Yeah, well, the only way you can do it is to have one religion versus another to get standing in these kind of things. And then the atheists can stand behind this other religion and say, see, they're being discriminated against, so...
Well, one of the things about standing is that...
some sort of standing at that point, but...
You have to. You can go this route where you demonstrate that you have been harmed by a particular mm-hmm. law or action. The problem is that that harm can be a very
subtle.
Yeah,
like the fact that atheists are the most distrusted minority in the world due to 2,000 or umpteen thousand years of uninterrupted theistic slander.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that being known as an atheist, that automatically kind of lessens your authority, your opinions.
Yeah,
I trivializes them. Yeah.
A lot of people have been equating atheism, even the 2020 special was talking about using the term the new closet, and equating it to homosexual issues. Because we're similarly distrusted, maligned, when you come out of the closet as a homosexual, you often lose the support of your family.
Right.
The same thing happens with atheists. And there are similarities.
Also,
I don't think it's to the same extent.
There's another similarity. Gays don't have a big G tattooed on their forehead, just like atheists don't have a big A tattooed on their forehead.
Right.
You don't know if you're talking to a gay person or not, just like you don't know if you're talking to an atheist or not, unless you address that specific issue, and he's willing to talk to you about it.
Yeah. But
blacks? No. It's right on their skin.
Yes.
Their difference is right on their skin, and so... they had it really rough.
I got in an argument with, and I can't remember her name, and it's probably good. She was part of the Paula Zahn panel on why atheists inspire such hatred. Mm-hmm. And she was scoffing at how, atheism could be compared to the civil rights issues of blacks. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, at some level, you're correct. Because I can walk into a place and nobody knows whether I'm an atheist. But her point was that atheism is a choice. Being black isn't. Well, you guys tried to use that choice argument with gays for a long time, and we haven't eliminated that yet. I mean, that's still
They're still holding their closing their eyes and sticking their fingers in their ears and going la 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 la.
Yeah,
that's the only reason why we haven't eliminated that stupid argument.
But it should be eliminated. Yes. But my point is, first of all, I don't believe that belief is subject to the will, so my atheism isn't a choice. I didn't just say, I think I'd prefer not to believe in a God, so I'll not believe in a God.
Right.
That's asinine.
I try to believe only in things I'm forced to believe in.
Yeah. I mean, belief is the state of accepting something as true, and you have to be necessarily convinced that it's true. Now, your criteria coming to that,
be different.
You know, maybe incredibly low. And I think that's the problem, is that people have different criteria for different claims, which is fine, because claims need different evidence.
For different people.
And they've just made a horrible mistake with regard to religion about...
Accuracy counts.
Yes. Some methods are better than others. I'm having a discussion kind of down this line on the forums. But my point is, even if atheism were a choice, so fucking what?
Yeah.
You don't get to fucking destroy my rights, treat me as a second-class citizen, just because I chose something that you don't agree with.
Right. Is that what this country's about?
Choice.
Stomping on people who disagree with you?
Choice is irrelevant. If they choose not to be like you, too fucking bad. Oh, you know, look at that guy. He's all tattooed and pierced and you know, he's choosing to be different. Yeah.
So?
That's his right.
Yeah.
You don't get to fucking discriminate against him just because he doesn't look or act like you. If he's not breaking a law, if he's not doing harm to others, if he's not he's not engaged in criminal action, shut the fuck up and leave him alone.
Right.
Drives me
it's
crazy.
Simple. But they don't, no.
People
they have
are
a God
so...
that demands that they stick their nose in.
And I don't even, you know, some of it is religiously based, but some of it is also kind of just magical thinking based.
Oh, sure.
But a lot of it is just fear of anything that's different
anything
from you.
Different, yeah. This is xenophobia.
You're a little bit different from me, so I'm nervous about you. And it's understandable. I completely understand. But what's the problem isn't that you're afraid of things that are different from you. The problem is what you do about that fear.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a big, long discussion on the forum this week, which I'm not going to hit on today, about hate crime legislation and ignoring the legislation part. The thing about hate crimes, truly actions based on bigotry, which we know is based on ignorance and fear, the crimes are an irrational lashing out at the things that are different from you.
Sure. It's like, okay, you know... Would I be nervous, you know, visiting a, you know, madrasa? For sure. But now, how do I, you know, would I have fear? Yeah. But how would I act if I was talking to one of the people there? Like I talk to anyone.
Yeah. Well, one of the things is that there are fears that are justified.
Yeah.
There are rational fears. But your actions that you take on behalf of those fears are your own.
Yeah.
And whether or not you let fear control your life is kind of your own problem.
Yeah. Make your own threat assessment and see. Yeah.
So what else have we got?
I'm down to mail now.
We have lots and lots of listener mail. And
I
mean, let's just start hammering through it.
Should we just start on one?
Sure. Pick something.
Okay. Let's see here. Well, actually, this is from the P.Z. Myers site.
Oh,
it's
so
really
is...
kind of a news story, you want to do that one.
P.Z. yesterday ran a news item that said, any Alabama readers, you might want to skip this one. We're laughing at your state. I guess y'all are having a drought, and your farmers are worried. I sympathize, and I do hope you get some good, healthy summer storms soon. I'd like to ship them the storm that hit us the other day. For those who don't know, we're still expecting more flooding through Sunday, possibly. But
yes,
holy
we've
cow!
We've had an unusual amount of rain.
I've been in rain that came down in buckets and in sheets. This one came down in swimming pools, and I kid you not, shorted something out in my car to where the power steering stopped working on the drive home.
Oh, good grief!
So,
yeah, I've only experienced that kind of rain in Houston. It was awful.
But PZ continues, I hope you get some healthy summer storms soon, but well, your governor is a doofus. With the state's weather forecast, with the state's weather forecasters not delivering much needed rain, that's a weird...
Delivering much needed rain.
Well, their forecasters don't really deliver the rain.
But
anyway, Governor Bob Riley on Thursday turned to a higher power. The governor issued a proclamation calling for a week of prayer for rain beginning Saturday. Riley encouraged Alabamans to pray individually and in their houses of worship. Throughout our history, Alabamians
have turned in prayer to God to humbly ask for His blessing and hold us steady during times of difficulty. This drought is without question a time of great difficulty.
So, apparently nobody blinks an eye if he says, let's pray for a week for rain. But I think they might get a different result if he said, let's all do rain dances for a week.
Or let's sacrifice some goats or babies.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. PZ brings up, of course, the two main points.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, prayer doesn't fucking work.
No.
And never does. And
nothing works like prayer.
He says, besides, if it's Georgia putting a curse on you, they outvote you in God's eyes. But the thing is, here's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
If they do get rain over the course of the next week,
yeah,
they will attribute it to the fact that they prayed. As a matter of fact, if they pray for a solid week and then they get rain the next week, that will be because they prayed the week before.
Right.
And if it happens 2 weeks later, I guess it takes a while for these messages to get to God and for Him to answer.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that's going to demonstrate to them that prayer doesn't work is if they don't get any more rain at all.
Right.
Ever. If they get rain next year, it'll be because they prayed this year. Now,
or there'll be ones praying just before they get it next year.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there's no winning. It's
on the one hand, I hope they get rain soon.
Count the hits and forget the misses.
Drought is a terrible thing. I hope they get rain soon. On the other hand, I hope they don't get any more rain for the rest of the summer. Not a fucking drop. Because then we'll be able to say, look, you put out a call and had everybody praying and praying for a week solid to get rain, and you got nothing. That is a test of intercessory prayer. Period.
Yeah. Hey, and what does it say in the Bible? Only two people really have to do that.
You only have to have two sincere people to ask for
That's
something.
Right.
And whatever they ask, it'll be given.
Yep.
There should never be any drought. There should never be any drought. There should be no hunger. There should be no war. There should be no discomfort or displeasure at all. Clearly what we have is there aren't any two righteous people on the planet who agree on their notion of God and want to pray for something.
Right. There would be no mountains in inconvenient places.
Yes, they would.
Right.
They would all when we went to construct our highways, we wouldn't need heavy moving equipment. We'd just move the mountains to Montana or someplace that doesn't matter.
Right.
We'll send them to Canada.
Montana, someplace that doesn't matter.
I only said that so that somebody in Montana would write us.
Cool. We need more people from Montana to write us.
Yeah, I haven't started actually marking. I have this huge world map on my wall now. And one of the reasons I got it was to start putting marks next to places where people had written us from.
Oh, cool.
I haven't actually started doing it yet. But
we got to do that. That'd be cool.
I promise that if you're in Montana and you can verify this, Montana will be the first one to go on the map just because I made fun of you. And if you're in Alabama, I'm really sorry.
Yes.
Really sorry that your governor is a moron.
Didn't one of the big guys in Australia issue a similar sort of thing? Tell people, let's pray for rain.
There was somebody somewhere recently.
Australia.
I don't remember where it was, but they and I'll ask the chat room, they'll probably know. Mm-hmm. He called for rain, and they got all kinds of rain, and then they had to pray to get the rain to stop.
Because it was too much. Maybe some people prayed for rain here in Austin. Bastards.
Yeah, so if you're in the chat room, you know where that is. Hook a brother up.
Yeah. Shall I go on to another?
Yeah, please do.
All right. Let's see. This is Mark writes, gentlemen, I think you might find the article below of interest. The Catholics are getting upset that they seem unable to escape the financial burden of their abuse problem. While I can't say I agree with people using the legal system in an attempt to get unjustified monetary damages, I am all for proper compensation being delivered to those who are harmed by the sick practices of the Catholic Church or any irresponsible institution or individual. And being an anti-theist, anything that weakens the Church's financial resources is, I believe, a long-term benefit to society.
Amen.
Right. Let's see, the article he cites are ambulance chaser attorneys now become Catholic Church chasers. So here's a big
I rescend any remark about having too many lawyers.
Yeah.
We have all seen the ads, infomercials, and billboards for various attorneys who plead with you to call them if you experience a certain pain or discomfort from an accident, fall, or some other incident. It seems these attorneys, who, by the way, are loathed by most of their fellow attorney colleagues, are now using the same modus operandi with the Catholic Church that they have used with accident victims, or worse yet, people who decided to purposely slip and fell or found some foreign object in their salad or soft drink. Okay, anyway. These Catholic Church-chasing attorneys are now crisscrossing the U.S. and attempting to not only file frivolous lawsuits against the Church, but in more devious cases, get state legislatures to change their laws so that dioceses can be sued for incidences that happened decades ago. These attorneys are approaching alleged victims who have not even contacted them. The attorneys are sorting through the rumor mill, assuming that even if only a snippet of truth exists about the rumors, a lawsuit could be a possibility.
It's been a while since we hammered the pedophile priests.
Yeah.
We used to, you had a weekly thing almost, or every show you'd bring in something about pedophile priests. I'd like to see the Catholic Church sued into oblivion. It makes no difference to me how much good they may or may have or may not have done throughout history. The mere fact that they are sheltering pedophiles, that they are shuffling them from place to place, that they are not taking action sufficient to stop these people from injuring children, I think the Vatican should be melted down and distributed to every Catholic kid. Just bam.
Sure. Yeah. You'll get some gold.
Something along those lines.
Yeah. As Mark points out, the best part is in the last of the article here. As the old cliche goes, two wrongs don't make a right. I can't fathom why anyone would want to ruin the whole Catholic institution because of a few deviants and miscreants.
It's not a few, and it's not the fact that there are a few.
Right.
It's what they've done to
protect them.
They've protected them from prosecution. They have shipped them off to new dioceses where they continue
their predation
with new victims. It's the fact that they've done nothing to stop the cycle of abuse.
Uh-huh. And, as Mark points out, since when is just compensation for egregious offenses a wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I have no idea how to determine just compensation for things.
Oh, man, no.
I do think that I've seen court cases where the penalty was ridiculous and seemed completely disproportionate to the crime. When juries award millions of dollars because you burned your lap with some coffee or whatever.
Right.
But when we're talking about human beings in their formative and impressionable years being abused and used as like playthings and then disregarded, when their complaints go unanswered, when there's no resolution to the problem that's occurred, and you compound that by shuffling the perpetrator off to a new area so that he can do this again to somebody else, I don't care what good your organization's done. Your organization is fucking corrupt and evil, and it needs to be eliminated. I have the same problems, or similar problems, with the Mormon extremists advocate this particular form of polygamy. I have no problem with people who are polyamorous, but this particular form of polygamy where young teenage girls are basically sold off to dirty old fucking men to be their, you know, their little nubile sex slave and do, you know, all the work and take care of the kids and blah, blah, blah. And I have a problem with churches, Mormon or otherwise, that enforce strict tithes on people. Because when you look at how much people actually donate, and I talked about this last week on the Atheist Experience, the people who make the least donate the most as a percentage of their income. If you make under people who make under $15,000 a year in the United States donate 25 to 26% of their income, and the majority of that goes to churches. People who make $100,000 or more, they're like in the 4 to 6% range is what they donate.
Right.
And I'm not saying how much of a donation anybody should give. And I'm not saying that the people who give 5% are wrong. What I'm saying is that it is wrong fundamentally for church organizations, religious organizations, any fucking organization to prey on the poor and take and encourage them to donate more and more or require them to donate that. There are people who can't put food on the table who are given 20% of their paycheck to the church while the church doesn't need your money. There's a reason why you see a lot of fat fucking preachers like Falwell.
Yeah.
There's a reason why these churches are lavishly decorated with all kinds of intricate wood carvings and gold and paintings and other shit. It's nonsense. It is a complete waste of money, and you're destroying lives in the process.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Now, of course,
That was obviously today's rant.
Yeah.
And by the way, as a reminder, I just found out there will not be an episode of The Atheist Experience tomorrow. Also, in response to a number of people because I know we have people here who listen to both shows, we are aware that the audio from last week's episode of The Atheist Experience is completely fucked up.
Oh,
there's
no
hisses and scratches and volume problems. It has our primary means of recording failed. And it's that way in the video that's posted online, and there's just nothing we can do about it, and we're hoping that it doesn't happen again. It was just beyond our control.
It's just hard keeping the needle in the groove.
Yes. When you're dancing around.
But now this article is, of course, you know, talking about people defrauding the church, you know, claiming they were abused when they weren't. And, of course, yeah, that's bad. Don't do that. That's fraud. But, geez, you know, don't try to lessen the, don't try to distract the pedophile issue away from the church by trying to turn it into, oh, look at all these people trying to screw us over. No, dude, you've screwed enough people over yourselves. We're not going to forget your issue.
I didn't mean to incite a panic by saying that there wasn't going to be an Atheist Experience tomorrow. They're painting the studio. they're painting the studios. They're doing some improvements, and we're not going to be able to have a show tomorrow. If I'd have found out earlier, I would have mentioned it, but I just found out the other day. And, you know, please don't begrudge me one Sunday off. Although next time I take a Sunday off, I'll get Ashley to fill in.
They're painting the studios with human blood.
Let me hit a couple of the emails that you don't have,
oh, yeah,
and we'll get back
to
yours.
Do it.
This one prompted a conversation a little back and forth. Please stop saying silly stuff on your show when you can't back it up with evidence. I had to stop listening to the Skeptic's Guide for that very reason and would hate to lose all respect for you as well. If you can prove the official 9/11 conspiracy theory, do it. You'd be the first. I agree that some people go nuts and claim the NWO and whatnot were behind it. They're nuts. However, the facts show the government has lied continuously about almost everything involving 9/11. Okay, first of all, if your criteria for whether or not you're going to listen to somebody is strictly whether or not they agree with you, that's your prerogative. However, if you find that you're listening to several programs and they continue to say similar things and you respect them and agree with them on many things, and you find one area where both of these programs happen to disagree with your preconceptions, maybe instead of putting your fingers in your ear, one good option is to investigate and find out what are they really saying and what reason do they have for saying it. I never, in my discussion about the Zeitgeist film and how far it went down a particular road, said that I flatly accept the official 9/11, explanation. That I never said I accepted the results of the 9/11 Commission. I never specifically stated what I believed about any of this at all. So don't put words in my mouth. What I said was that the first part of that Zeitgeist film, and there were several people who wrote about it, brought up some interesting points about similarities between the Jesus story and other died, risen Savior stories, as well as a number of other stories that are astrological in nature, but that I thought they went slightly too far when they flatly assert that the Jesus story was moved from, was basically created out of whole cloth from these other, or not a whole cloth, but created from these other stories, specifically brought into a historical present, specifically related as historical, in order to control the masses. That to me is something you've got to do a little bit more work to prove. When you say, look, there's 12 astrological signs and Jesus had 12 disciples. Okay, so what? They may be directly related, but there are a number of reasons why that could be. People are fascinated, especially in ancient times, with the mystical nature of numbers. And numbers take on a significance to themselves. You know, threes and sevens and twelves and tens. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, completely normal reasons. We have a base 10 system because we have 10 fingers. But there's no evidence that they picked 12 because 12 was astrologically significant. It could just be that 12 was the actual number, if in fact it was a historical thing. And maybe Jesus picked 12 disciples because the number was significant, or maybe because it related to astrology. Maybe during the invention of the story, if Jesus wasn't historical, that number was picked because it was significant, because it was astrological. Maybe it was directly ripped off out of these other stories. The fact that there are similarities, to me, the best explanation to start with is the fact that humans are fundamentally similar. We come to similar conclusions, similar discoveries. We hold things similarly important. If you're going to make a case about a conspiracy, you have to do something more than collect a bunch of disparate facts that are interesting, that are possibly more than coincidental. You have to demonstrate the A to Z line that fully supports your conspiracy theory. With regard to the other two halves of the story about the 9/11 conspiracy theory, most of that was ripped from the Loose Change video, which even the person writing me says that they don't buy the Loose Change video. And the following stuff about international banking conspiracies and whether or not you have to pay taxes, those things... You can claim that it's unconstitutional and that you don't have to pay taxes, but yeah, that's not the case by law. And I realize that some people will argue that, well, the IRS is just using, you know, bully tactics and the whole government's in on the conspiracy. I think that when the whole government's in on a conspiracy, you've kind of entered a different situation. Now you're talking about what is real, and not at all talking about whether or not it's right. We got a number of comments about, you just don't get it, or if you're going to make a conspiracy, you've got to do a little bit more work than that. Somebody was talking about, in reference to your comments about the various theories of the events of 9/11, I have no trouble with your opinion, the official conspiracy. Whoops, I can't read what's there. About 19 hijackers with box cutters is true, and you give no credence to other theories. I think your credibility in general suffers when you admit that you haven't really looked into it, but nonetheless formed this opinion, and those that have looked into it have formed differing opinions are nuts. Okay, this one was from John. I emailed John, and here's what I said. Perhaps my credibility wouldn't suffer if we actually consider what I said and not what people heard. When did I state that I accept the official explanation as the complete truth to the exclusion of other theories? To my knowledge, I've never said any such thing. I specifically avoided stating what my opinions were on the issue. Also, when did I admit that I haven't looked into it? I've looked into several conspiracy theory videos, and other evidence related to 9/11 and considered their arguments and those who challenged their arguments. I'm no expert. I don't claim to have an ultimate answer, which is where I differ from the conspiracy theorists. What I said was that the conspiracy theorists gather disparate facts, many of which are actually true, and construct a story that appears compelling but doesn't survive investigation. When there's a disagreement over whether of what the actual facts of a particular issue are, they opt for those whose opinions support the conclusions that they're trying to make and reject those who disagree with their conclusions, often simply dismissing the individuals or accusing them of collusion. I'm not saying that conspiracy theories aren't possible, that they don't happen. I'm simply pointing out the absurdity of the current theories relative to how much evidential support we've seen for them.
That's right. I love some of the theories, too. I mean, elaborate constructs of fake airplanes with missiles that blow up inside, that hit the building the same time the planes do. And
right.
Just all this insane stuff. It's amazing.
Let me hit another one, because, as I said, I like people to correct me when I've made a big mistake. So somebody wrote in, Stephen from Chicagoland. Greetings. I took a semester of Hebrew last year, one of the many luxuries of religious schooling, and I think Matt may have made, some huge errors last Saturday. He said something like, according to the Old Testament, men can buy the women they've raped if they talk to their father. Therefore, Christians are hypocrites for not taking certain parts of the Bible literally. It would probably be helpful to see the actual passage before I completely miss the point. Yeah, that's a really good idea. But picking an ugly random verse from the Old Testament is an error I see atheists making far too often. There's a lot more to the out-of-context argument. Since the ancient Hebrews didn't have any sort of separation church and state, a lot of their common laws were mixed with what they considered sacred truths. That's why we see stuff on taxes, crops, and other human-inspired domestic
stuff.
Sure. An essential part of the Old Testament was when Yahweh introduced the ban. The Israelites were still allowed to violently invade other tribes, but now they couldn't loot the city. And from our modern post-Enlightenment perspective, this is still considered immoral, but Christians look past some of the nasty ancient traditions and view this as God punishing a long social evolution. I'll skip the rest of what he wrote so that I can get to my response. First, he said that I made some huge errors last Saturday. And my response was, that's certainly possible. I've made errors before, and I'm sure I'll make them in the future. While I haven't had any formal training in Hebrew, I have spent years studying the Bible, and in an effort to be thorough, that required me to research the text in Hebrew, Greek, and Aramaic. It also required me to dig a bit deeper, to find out what these texts originally meant to the authors and the first readers. That's an inexact science that will always risk errors due to anachronisms, but there are some things that we can discover. He mentioned the question about the issue of women being raped. There's a number of verses that address this issue, and the one that I was referencing was Deuteronomy 22, verses 28 and 29, which says, if a man happens to meet a virgin who is not pledged to be married and rapes her, and they are discovered, he shall pay the girl's father 50 shekels of silver. He must marry the girl, for he has violated her. He can never divorce her as long as he lives. Now, you're free to claim that I've taken that verse out of context. I don't see how that's possible. Out of context means that there are other verses surrounding there that expand or give more insight into what that actually means. Some things really do mean what they say. It's very clear on what this law addresses. If a man rapes a virgin who isn't betrothed, and they're discovered, he has to pay her father 50 shekels, and he has to marry her, and he can never divorce her. That's about as explicit as you can get. Now, you're free to disregard this passage by claiming that they mixed common laws and sacred truths. That's fine. But anyone can claim that this particular law is not a divine mandate. They can also claim that other passages are metaphoric or that their personal interpretation doesn't match the point I'm making. If the passage doesn't apply to what an individual believes, then what I said doesn't apply to them. Anyone can, for any reason, make the Bible say or not say nearly anything they choose. You can pick and choose whatever you want, disregard the things you don't like. If I say that the Bible says that a man who rapes a virgin can pay the father 50 shekels as long as she's not betrothed and marry her, that's a question of fact. That's what the Bible says. I'm not talking about how you interpret it. However, for those people who believe the Bible is the inerrant word of God, that every word and law is sacred truth, then the point that I made about potential hypocrisy is valid. And this is something that he agreed with when he wrote to me. I have a general rule. The farther someone's interpretation of a passage diverges from the literal text, the more likely it is to be wrong, and the less reason I have to actually accept that. We live in this kind of muddy world where there's no such thing as a true Christian, or everybody has their own idea of what a true Christian is. That's metaphoric. Oh, I believe this. Oh, I believe that. If you don't believe what I'm talking about, that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, I know people who do. Now, he went on to say, I haven't heard y'all mention the infinite punishments for finite crimes argument in a while. That was another misconception I was hoping to clear up. He went on to make the point that most Christians don't accept a literal hell. And that he doesn't. So what I said doesn't apply to him. And you're correct in saying that if you don't believe in a literal hell, then any comment I make about a literal hell doesn't apply to you. I don't think that you're correct in saying that most Christians reject a literal hell. Maybe most theologians do, but I've already gone on record as saying that I think most of those educated theologians are really atheists who are too afraid to give up the beliefs they were raised with. They're desperately trying to prop up this notion of a God as something good, despite the fact that there's no evidence, no good reason to believe it, and that everything that any ancient person said about their God is some kind of nasty, megamaniacal, you know, kind of brat who needs to be worshipped and smacks people down if they don't. He makes the point that the Bible's vague about exactly what heaven and hell's like. I agree. I even agree with him that if you read through what the Bible has to say about hell, it's not extremely easy to make a case for a literal hell. That people like Billy Graham and others who have argued this kind of universalist theology, that really what we have is eternal annihilation. If you believe in Jesus, you get to go to heaven, and if you don't, then you're just simply annihilated. That may, in fact, be an interpretation that is consistent with what the Bible teaches. And I'm going to be discussing this kind of a little bit at the August lecture on hell and visions of hell. But it doesn't matter. If most people believe that there's a literal hell, that there's lakes of fire, if they may not necessarily be as extreme about it as like the Fred Phelps clan, but that there's some eternal punishment, then my comment's valid for them. For those people who believe that, like the Stephen does, who wrote, that we're simply annihilated, that those of us who don't believe are just, our life ends, you don't get to get out of the problem by saying that.
No.
Yes, I will. You don't believe that I'm going to be tortured forever, but you do believe that I'm going to be annihilated, and that those people who believe will get to continue to exist. While annihilation, I guess, is preferable to eternal torment, it still sets up an inequality where, based purely on your belief and acceptance of this particular doctrine or view as correct or morally just or at least divinely appropriate,
mm-hmm.
you get to continue to exist and others don't. And I put it to you that does not escape the problem that we're talking about with a literal hell. Literal annihilation versus literal torture forever, not significantly different. The point is that you're done. You do not get the good life when you die. And I don't see that that's a just system. As a matter of fact, I see it as a wholly immoral system. Especially when you have, and I watched a movie the other night, Black Snake Moan, which I actually really, really liked. But there was a comment made by Christina Ricci in there when she was talking to a preacher about heaven, about, you know, you've got this kind of notion that you can do all these wrong things and just say you're sorry and go to heaven. Why would heaven want people like that? And while I realize that that is a gross oversimplification of even what most Christians believe, it still has some valid points in it. And simply saying that I don't believe you're going to be tortured forever, I just believe you're going to die and be annihilated while the rest of us get to live on.
And laugh at you.
Yeah. This, you don't, you know, it doesn't avoid the problem.
No.
And it doesn't make the system just.
Right.
And his response, of course, was initially that, well, why would you want to go to heaven to be with a God that has a system like that? I don't. But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't also like to continue to exist.
Right.
And none of it relates to whether or not any of this shit is true.
Yeah.
The fact that you have come to some intellectual departure and developed your own theology that differs from, you know, orthodox theology is irrelevant. You need to demonstrate that what you say is true.
Yeah. And why do they... It's like... Why do... They all call themselves Christians. Well, what does Christian mean?
Well, yeah, you're never going to find what... Everybody has their own definition.
I'd love to be able to tell them, you know, you guys talk among yourselves and don't bother us until you get your frickin' story straight.
Well, one of the problems is that regardless of what you believe about... If you're a Christian...
You even have a rule book, for Christ's sake.
If you're a Christian and you're listening, and I know there are some... Or at least, I don't know. I believe there are some because some have written in. Whether or not you believe in literal hell, we'll set that aside. Think for a moment about the system that you're advocating. You have some kind of transcendent, intelligent being mm-hmm. who creates a universe. Evidently, many believe that it's specifically for us, despite the
sure.
100 billion other galaxies with 100 billion stars apiece.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess their ego fills that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what dark matter is the ego emanations from theists.
Mm-hmm.
And he set up some kind of system, like a little machine that he dumps souls into.
Mm-hmm.
And the system is set up in such a way that it discourages the actual principles that he's looking for. Belief that there's a divine being is one of the precepts of many religions with afterlives. You have to mm-hmm. not only believe it, but accept that this being is good and just and worthy of worship, etc. Yet, everything about the reality that we exist in, if you exercise critical thinking, scientific evaluation of evidence, logic, all of that works in opposition to the nature of belief. And you'll find many Christians right. who accept that and freely admit it. Oh, yes, yes, this is a matter of faith. You have to have faith. Faith is a good thing. Faith Ugh. Is the key. And yet the system is designed specifically to avoid faith. And as these souls progress through there, one of the other things that this deity is looking for is beings that will worship. Evidently, in many cases, the purpose is to go to heaven and be there and forever worship. And so we need to discard those souls that are not willing to worship.
Yeah.
So we can discard these notions of, you know, God can't demonstrate himself to us because that would violate our free will. That's a load of shit.
Yeah.
He could walk in my living room right now and say, ha ha, I'm God. And I'll say, well, okay, I believe in you, but I'm not blowing you. You know, I'm not yep. buying into your particular, precepts that I need to genuflect. But the system, there's no logical reason for it. If you have this idea that a God is able to know the future,
mm-hmm.
that some level of omniscience
right.
that knows who's going to end up in heaven, then the system is pointless. There's no reason to
yeah.
filter the souls. It's like if I took a machine that was designed to sort white marbles from black marbles, and I went and dropped them into the machine. I can see what color they are before I drop them in. I don't need a machine to sort them for me.
Right.
I can just drop them into two different buckets.
Yeah, and if it's and if the whole point of this life is character building,
yeah.
the God's omnipotent. It can create pre-built character.
It
could just create the. It could run a simulation of the universe, and from that simulation, pick out the ones it wants to share heaven with and just create them, and there you go.
See, one of the common kind of answers to this that I've heard is that, you know, well, God was up in heaven or wherever, you know, maybe down
yeah.
in heaven, I don't know.
Whatever.
And he had all these angels, but they don't really have free will. And they were all worshiping him, and he decided that what he really needed was some beings who voluntarily chose to worship him of their own free
right.
will. This, while but it's a simplification that they bring up, is their justification for faith and the whole
right.
testing process of the universe. But my question is, why? Why does this being need to be worshipped? Why does it want people to voluntarily worship? What does it get
right.
out of this worship?
I have no idea.
And why can't it determine this without creating sentient beings only to either torture them forever or annihilate them?
Or reward them forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, this dovetails with another reader email by Andrew, who says, "Hi, I recently got into a discussion with a Christian in which he claimed that if God gave us concrete proof that he existed, that we'd have no choice but to worship him, thus violating our free will. I was able to use the argument, which I got from either the TV or radio show, that Satan knew for a fact that his boss existed, but was still able to rebel."
Yeah.
And you're pointing out that angels have no free will? So,
well, Satan
the devil,
was evidently
the Satan was obviously programmed to rebel.
Yeah, the whole thing is that the idea that Satan and a bunch of angels rebelled demonstrates that on some level they must have had free
they
will.
They must have had free will.
So it kind of invalidates that. But the
yeah.
other thing is the absurdity that you would be forced to worship. Now, what I do agree
yeah,
with
that too.
Is that, let's say I knew for a fact that this particular God exists, and that if I would simply say that I loved this God,
mm-hmm.
that I would not only live forever, but my afterlife would be preferable to me not saying it.
Right.
Would I have a strong motivation to say it? You bet your ass.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would I necessarily say it? I can't say that I would, and I can't say that I wouldn't, because I haven't
yeah.
been faced with that choice. I would need to know that something is real before it's worth my time to evaluate that risk. And that's one of the problems
if,
with Pascal's wager is that it ignores all the other religions.
Yeah. If we assume it's real, then what?
The thing is, would I prefer torture and maintain my
integrity
to living forever in, you know, I don't care how
and
wonderful
somebody
says
it is. And realizing that, I lied once.
It's not like I could fool that God
yeah.
anyways. You
yeah.
know. Oh, yes. Oh, Lord, you are so big. So completely huge.
How could you tell it you love it without actually... If you thought it would see through any pathetic pretense you put up, if you said you loved it, you'd have to mean it.
Yeah, it's another problem
yeah.
with Pascal's wager.
So you would be in heaven with something you love.
Well, yeah, you know,
by definition.
It can't be any sin in heaven, so
right.
You're lying about whether or not, you know, and God will know your heart. It's all absurd. It is a self-reinforcing,
mm-hmm.
it's internally inconsistent, but, you know,
bizarrely effective.
The thing is that it does relate, it does necessarily have to translate to the reality that we experience, and that is that they believe that God's put you in this world and that you can, while you're in this world, come to a determination about the reality of God and choose to worship that God and adhere to its policies and principles and blah, blah, blah. And yet, I forgot where I was going.
I lost your train.
That's the thing, is that these concepts are absurd. And there's no... They all skip past the opening steps of demonstrating that there's any good reason to believe it in the first
mm-hmm.
place. You know, but it does have, whether or not these things are true, should have an effect on reality. There should be And I know many Christians will say there is. All you got to do, I mean, Ray Comfortable says it all the time. Get down on your knees, ask God to reveal himself to you, and he definitely will. This is the way God works. He definitely will. And yet, when I say I've done that and it didn't happen, well, then there's some excuse. Well,
right.
You weren't serious, or you didn't do it right, or you didn't mean it.
And if he did reveal himself,